In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long time contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he, like all of our guests, joins us. It's brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, I mean, new and more spectacular ways to lose is what's going on, Brad. They've lost four in a row, two of them. The ridiculous outcome in Washington and this one at home. To Green Bay, that is 11 in a row. Give me the O for the Green Bay Packers, and surely that leaves a mark with the organization.
Yeah, it's the longest active streak that any team in the league has against another opponent. It's the longest winning streak in the storied history of Bears-Packers. The Packers had previously had a 10-game winning streak from 94 to 98 against the Bears, and puts this season in further peril. Now at 4-6, they found a way to close out the game at Washington and the one yesterday afternoon. They'd be sitting at 6-4. They would be currently in the NFC playoff picture based on the standings, and I think there'd be a completely different vibe about the organization. But they can't get out of their own way on the final play of the game. Now
they can't close. And that's coaching. It's judgment. It's decision making. How much does Matt Eberflus have to explain to others, to his bosses? Do you think it comes up? Because Brad, you're exactly right. They are just on the verge of breaking through into playoff contention mode. They've been unable to do that because of two decisions that were key end-of-game decisions. That's coaching.
Yeah, it's fair to question him not choosing to run another offensive play or potentially even two there at the end of the game in the setup for a 46-yard field goal. More problematic was poor blocking on that play. That you've got to be better than they were against that pressure. You got to know that the Packers are going to sell out. You're getting their best rush at the game's critical moment. That being said, and I know it's easy to go back and look at a Mark Trestman field goal decision at Minnesota and Matt Nagy against the Chargers. I mean, those weren't even factors when those guys were fired, right? And when Matt Eberflus is done at Hallis Hall, this isn't going to be a factor. More problematic from a coaching standpoint yesterday to me was the complete lack of a pass rush. And I wish I had gotten into that in my column this morning. I didn't. Jordan Love had two quarterback hits on him the entire game. There were way too many times when he was back in the pocket and just had all day. They had a really poor breakdown up front on the scramble where Love, who's not even close to 100%, was able to get inside the 1 yard line. He gained 13 yards, I think, on that play. Almost got the ball in the end zone. Like, the defense kind of eroding here. The pass rush non-existent, like Zach Tom, the Packers right tackle, that guy looks like a Pro Bowl player going against Montez Sweat, and Montez might not be at 100% right now. That's a bigger coaching problem to me than talking about the decision to not run another play or two. Again, the blocking is a bigger thing. Like it's sport to pile on Eberflus right now.
Not piling on. It's pointing a finger. It's in the right direction.
You're right. It's not piling on, but it's sport to pick something out and just hammer away. And there were bigger issues yesterday if you want to talk about a coaching standpoint.
I got to tell you, I don't understand why you would just run the clock out and try a 46-yard field goal. You know, the whole point of the exercise is to get as close as possible and make the field goal as easy as possible. The whole point, if you run another play, who knows? Maybe you break a big play. You know, maybe you saw what
the Chargers did last night. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know how.
I mean, it's fair criticism. It's a fair question. I just think there were bigger coaching shortcomings. If you're looking at what Eberflus did yesterday, like I don't have a problem with them kicking from 46 as much as I do zero pass rush. Like that's right. A way bigger problem in my mind.
So in the midst of all this disappointment, 11 straight losses, the McCaskies have to deal with that. Nothing George likes more than beating the Packers. As you point out in 10 Thoughts on ChicagoTribune.com, they wake up every day thinking about beating the Packers. They've never fired a head coach in season. They had never fired an offensive coordinator in season either until last week. Last night, as the McCaskies gathered, as they commiserated, was that ever a point of discussion? Has anybody, do you think, started to discuss the possibility of moving on from this head coach during the season?
I wouldn't rule anything out because I don't know, you know, where Kevin Warren's at in this and what his influence will be on the decision. So I would never say never. They were better offensively yesterday. They weren't good enough, but they were better offensively. 19 points is you need more than that. You need to do better than that. But certainly they got a boost with Thomas Brown taking over the play calling, and that was a move they made that hopefully gets them going in the right direction. So it'll be real interesting to see where Thomas Brown's at after about four games, when opponents have some stuff to study, some tendencies to look at, and things of that nature. But in terms of them letting Eberflus go in the season, like barring something dramatic, he'll be gone after the season.
Right.
In season,
Fred, who would take over?
I wouldn't rule it out.
I'm just saying, who would take over? I feel like with Waldron, you had another option. He had a guy who called play. I'm not saying that they did it just because of that reason, but at least there was an option.
Right.
Who is the guy you hire then? Because Eberflus is a good a defense coordinator. I get it.
I think you've got a couple options. You got a couple options. You take your special teams coordinator, Richard Hightower, and you put him in charge. Give the responsibility to defensive coordinator Eric Washington, and maybe you have your linebackers coach Dave Borganzi call the defense, and maybe you give it to cornerbacks coach John Hoke. Mm-hmm. They've got directions they could go if that's what they want to do. The question isn't who takes over to me. The question is, do the McCaskies want to do something that they've never done in season before? Do they believe it's a step toward improving the football team immediately in season, or just an inevitability thing that sets them on the path to getting a new head coach? Carrying Eberflus as the head coach through the Week 18 game at Lambeau Field would not set them back in a coaching search. Like you, it's not like you're starting behind other teams that have made in-season moves. Not if you've got a competent group in place that can begin evaluating options and putting together lists and thinking about possibilities.
This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. Okay, Brad, great nugget on Ryan Bates seeking help to continue his career, giving credit to Ryan Poles for allowing him to do that. Fill in the blanks in what you reported this morning on ChicagoTribune.com.
Well, Bates has got a shoulder that's had arthritic conditions that he's been able to manage in the past. He's never missed time, he's significant time. He's never been on IR before this season, and the team hoped that he'd be able to manage the situation with rest and training camp. That didn't work out. They tried conventional things with rest and all that, and it was just really difficult for him. He couldn't do a push-up. He couldn't raise his left arm above being parallel with the ground. He was in no position to be able to play football. And barring something that was going to fix this, he was probably going to have to consider retirement. And he chose to get stem cell therapy on the shoulder, travel to Panama, which is something he's got to pay for on his own dime. Did that shortly after the team placed him on IR, and says he feels, calls it life-changing, you know, says it's 1,000% better. Unfortunately, he leaves the game yesterday after the first series with a concussion, but when he's able to clear protocol and come back, the shoulder is a non-issue for him on the field. And, you know, I think that speaks to Bates' desire to compete at the highest level possible. I think it speaks to Bates' understanding that the team has shown a lot to him. They tried to acquire him in 2022. They traded for him this year. Like, he feels like he needs to deliver for them because of the faith that they've put in him. And so he went to all lengths to invest in his, you know, he's investing in himself. He's investing in his career.
That's wild. You know, Cousins went and got stem cell therapy in a, I think it was a Caribbean country, as I recall, but elsewhere.
You guys will go to Germany.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the place that Bates went to has worked with Kenny Clark, mm-hmm. The Packers defensive tackle, and other NFL players. So, it's not commonplace, I don't think. I would call it that. But, you know, they and Bates had the blessing of the team. You know, they, right. They walked through the possibilities. They talked about it internally. Bates did research with other doctors. And because this wasn't something where they could go in and do shoulder surgery and fix it. Like, structurally,
yeah,
there was nothing wrong with his shoulder. It was just dealing with arthritis that was crippling to him.
I've been to Panama several times. This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com.
I wondered how you stayed so healthy.
Yeah, I've never gotten stem cell therapy.
Not yet.
But I had like an alcohol-induced weekend. My brother used to live in Panama. Yeah.
So, Brad, so when you look at this week and what to expect next, I guess you look at the offense and the impact that Thomas Brown has made and the progress that maybe Caleb Williams made. Brian Flores offers another challenge. Can the Bears, it's only 19 points, but do they have something they could build on moving ahead to the Vikings?
Yeah, I think they do. You know, first of all, they've got belief, right? And as disappointed as the players were, and it was a gutting loss for them. But as disappointed as they were, I think they look at kind of the vibe they had in the building last week after the move was made, and then they're able to look at the tape and say, okay, we were able to accomplish this. They were able to run the football. They were able to stay ahead of the chains. That's why they were extremely successful on third down yesterday, 9 of 16, over 56% on third down. Why is that? Well, they were in a lot of third and one, third and two, and everything's open in the playbook, right? You can run the ball, you can throw the ball. I think you're looking at ways to build off of that. Now it's going to come against a really challenging Vikings defense. And the first thing you talk about with that Brian Flores unit is their ability to blitz you with all sorts of looks that, I mean, there's going to be stuff that Caleb Williams hasn't seen, and they'll be able to study some of this on film, but you've got no idea who's coming or when they're coming. And so, and you saw it play out the last season with Justin Fields in there. I mean, it's going to be really something where they're getting the kitchen sink and other appliances in the kitchen thrown at them. Like it's going to be difficult. Air fryer. Yeah. Yeah. And here comes the dishwasher and everything else and the Keurig machine.
Yeah.
So you talk about that and you say, well, God, that's going to be a bear for them to handle, especially with how they pass protected this year. Then you look at the Vikings run defense, guys, number one in the league, 74.4 yards per game. They're number two in yards per rush attempt, 3.58. And that's what the Bears have to do to stay balanced. So if they're not going to be able to run the ball against Minnesota, which that's going to be the Vikings' preference, then you got to look out. So that's the scary thing to me. The hope is that Sam Darnold appears to have come back down to earth. Right, guys? He's got an interception in five of his last six games. He is not this dynamic, resurrected quarterback that he was early in the season when he was playing at a high level. I think Sam Darnold is who he's kind of always been in the past. Now they're finding ways to win. Check that. I give you a bad stat. He does not have a pick in five of his last six games, but he did throw three picks 2 weeks ago and then two picks 3 weeks ago. So he's got five interceptions in his last three ball games, and that's got to be the path to success for the Bears, right? And they won the turnover margin yesterday. It did not lead to victory, but they're going to have to drill that all week at Hallis Hall.
Yeah, I guess we look at it, and the quarterback played better, and you feel like maybe that's a possibility moving forward. The problem is he's won two games now that they've lost. You know what I'm saying? He's come back and rallied them to victory twice, and it doesn't count. It's kind of bittersweet,
right? And they need to do more, right? They again, 19 points, like it feels good because it was better, but they couldn't be worse than they'd been in that three-game stretch. Like that was the – I talked to Mark Richt a little bit, the former Georgia coach, Miami coach, who recruited Thomas Brown, coached him, hired him to his staff, had him as an offensive coordinator for the Miami Hurricanes. And I said, well, geez, this is about the toughest spot any coach could be thrown into as the play caller for this offense that's stuck in the mud. And Rick started laughing a little bit. He's like, well, he's like, any sign of improvement would probably be welcome, and it might be more difficult taking over for a guy like Nick Saban. And then I was laughing because I was, well, yeah, good luck carrying on the Saban tradition at Alabama. But his point was that they're probably more challenging situations and that these guys were at rock bottom. That there was really only maybe they don't get better, but they're not going to be worse. And they were better yesterday. Right. Again, third down, 391 yards of offense, balanced play calling. What we saw him get Roschon Johnson more involved with Roschon taking a decent number of snaps in base personnel. So it was 14 carries for Swift, 10 for Roschon. And I think that's important to note, guys, because you see where Swift's at right now, and he's on pace to have 260-some-odd carries. I don't have the exact number in front of me, which would be a career high and about 35 more than he had last season. And Swift isn't that bell cow guy that you want to feed the rock 20 times a game to. So I think they want to be mindful of that moving forward. And you've got Roschon, who you can lean into his strengths and what he does well. You can involve him in the passing game, too. He caught a ball out of the backfield yesterday. So that would be something to look forward to in the coming weeks, is will Thomas Brown want to maintain a little more balance in terms of distribution for the running backs and play time, because they had success with it yesterday, and they're going to need to have more, because you can't count on Caleb Williams to deliver 70 rushing yards right a game for you as he had yesterday.
Great stuff, Brad. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs. He's the football man of the Chicago Tribune. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Rich said to our team last night, "I will not understand if we come out of this game without a block, whether field goal or PAT." So, great job by our special teams coaches.
Cairo Brooks, I just talked to him, and he said that they called, Bisaccia called up something that they'd never done, actually, when he moved or where he moved. How do you even prepare for something like that without taking this all on yourself?
I mean, yeah, if they made a change that got made that play, no credit to them. You know, Bisaccia is a great coach. We respect their unit, him as a coach. And, I think they just made a play and got enough penetration right in the path of the ball. Yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. You heard first the flower, that Le Fleur.
11-0 now.
And then you heard from from Cairo Santos, the Bears Brazilian-born field goal kicker.
Great question by Stacey Dales.
Yes.
Because it had to be asked and put into that context and those kind of terms, and she did a terrific job. Post-game, and just as usual, interesting day for the national perspective on the Bears, Bears-Packers. Fox booth with Tom Brady there.
Excellent.
Did very well.
I thought he did.
From a lot of accounts. Talked to other people who thought he was very interesting and wasn't just offering platitudes, but his own experiences.
He's gotten so much better,
some
David,
insight. Yeah.
From when he first
That's good.
Started. Yeah.
Yeah, I did
and
not
you
hear
knew
yesterday.
He would. You knew.
Yeah, you knew he would. And then, obviously, you know, the focus will be on what Matt Eberflus could have done, what they could have, you know, continued to get closer and all the things. But I think it's just when you get past the trauma almost as a Bears fan of watching another game slip away on the last play of the game, then you start to settle in and you look ahead and it's like, you know, it's pretty bleak, Mully. It's unfortunate because the expectations that existed at the beginning of the season seems like a very long time ago, and you don't want to accept what is next, because what's next is a very difficult 7-game stretch to end your season, and then the beginning of what? You will be
it's
in a
be an awful. It's going to be a terrible offseason.
It will be. I agree.
If you were covering this team, and we've been down that road, that is a terrible, terrible thing to have happen.
I was at the game and talked to a couple of guys who do cover this team and understand what is ahead. And you're right. You sense this, it's a woebegone feeling. And it feel like you've done it before because you know what? You have if you've been here long enough. Mm-hmm. And yesterday felt like the wheels coming off again. And it resembles so many other 10 years that are kind of wobbly. And they need to be they need to start over again, and you're sensing that. It's unfortunate, unless you're barring a really unexpected turnaround. That's where this is all headed, and that's what's unfortunate, because it could have gone differently, and the season began with so much hope.
312-644-6767 Let's try Keith. He's in Shorewood. Hi, Keith.
Hey, guys. 2 points I actually want to make, and one I haven't heard today. The first one being that I think there's some good news coming out of that game yesterday, and I think that it's this. I think Caleb Williams will be playing playoff football for the next 7 weeks, as you guys just mentioned, because the competition that he's going to be facing, including I think Seattle is also in there, and the 49ers, we get to see Caleb continue to improve his game. And quite frankly, it's probably the only thing that's left in this season, because they're not going to be able to win out, and they're going to lose more than two games, and the playoffs will be over with. But I also think there was another thing that came out yesterday that was a complete indictment of Eberflus, more than what Brad Biggs mentioned about the line. I saw something yesterday out of Caleb Williams that it's happened now and then, but the Bears used Caleb Williams, not only his arm yesterday, but they used his legs to continue series, continue third down. That's why they were so effective yesterday. And that is an indictment of Flus, because he's had exposure since he's been drafted to know that that's a strength of Caleb Williams, and they weren't able to convince Williams to do that. The new OC, I'm going to guess, was able to convince Williams to use that as part of his strength to continue, and showed how they continue series. And I'm sure Williams now sees that as a way to continue forward. It's what threw Green Bay off in that game, and it's what kept the game close in many quarters.
Thanks, Keith. I agree with you in terms of the Caleb Williams being mobile and athletic is something people shouldn't be so surprised by. But I also, by the same token, don't want him relying on that as often as he might have suggested he will moving forward yesterday. You don't want him to be a runner. You want him to be able to escape the
pass rush.
Yeah, listen, I think, improvise, but
I think he has a knack for running. In other words, I feel like he doesn't really get big shots. Like, he kind of has this understanding of when to get out of bounds, when to go down. Yeah. He's one of these guys that is, where he, it's not like anyone's getting a clean shot at him. If I felt like he was getting hit on every run, I would probably be more concerned about it. I think sometimes he's reading where they're coming from and what they're doing. And there was one time when the guy went inside, and he knew once he got around the edge that he was going to be able to pick up a first down. I like that quality.
I agree with that.
I don't want him getting hit.
No.
And I don't want him in harm's way at all.
That's why I hesitate to give Thomas Brown too much credit for that, because of how instinctive some of these plays were yesterday. He picked up a lot of ground, or yards on the ground, but it was after maybe plays broke down, or he sensed that he could get to a corner on a rusher.
Yes.
And I don't know that maybe it was a conversation that Thomas Brown had with Caleb Williams. Said, hey, you don't be afraid to do this or whatever.
Yes.
But I don't know that I want to give that credit to the offensive coordinator for somebody just having natural instincts. He could have gotten 70 yards rushing, maybe regardless of who was calling the plays, because a lot of those yards came after the pocket collapsed and he had to just make do.
But I think that the reason they were moving the chains is because they got some positive plays out of plays that, as you say, were breaking down and that they weren't going to be able to convert. So
he's a very good escape artist.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have a problem with it. I don't want him to be the feature runner on the team. This is not Justin Fields. This is a totally different kind of deal.
That's what I think I want to resist encourage.
But I want him to – I want like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I want him to throw the ball.
They did that better. I think they did a better job of that. The timing routes, the way they get rid of the ball quickly.
And I'm serious about that. Like, for some reason, DJ Moore, all those screens blew up when Shane Waldron was calling him. And this time out, it looked like they were getting 10 yards pop.
After one of those plays, I believe it was maybe the play that was not necessarily a screen, but it was a forward pass, a little shovel pass. It looked like a jet sweep, could have been a handoff. Roma Dunze was celebrating wildly, and I felt like he was not celebrating the fact that DJ Moore had such a good move or whatever. I think he was celebrating a block that he made, because he had a stock block that was really successfully and well done. And when you get players excited, wide receivers especially, about blocks that they make, that's when I think you do see evidence of coaching. And I think that's what you're talking about. these plays were blocked better.
Yes.
And the attention to detail was maybe more acute than it was earlier in the season. And that could be just as simple as we talk about the Thomas Brown bounce. Guys who are paying attention to the details that Olin Kreutz has mentioned time and again.
Yes.
That's where you win and lose, on the margins. And the Bears did a better job of that offensively of doing that.
They got a DeAndre Swift touchdown because Braxton Jones got outside and just destroyed a guy. It was unbelievable. And then you watch your running back score a touchdown on that play. That was a very big, important play in that game.
And, now,
and that was the best block
we can credit,
maybe of the season.
It could have been the most obvious one.
Yeah.
And you can credit Thomas Brown for that if you like, but I think you're exaggerating it. Braxton Jones deserves credit for that. He got out in the open field.
Did a great job.
He was mobile in space, as they say, and he imposed his will on a poor defensive back. So Thomas Brown had a good game. It was 34 runs, 34 dropbacks. That's evenly balanced, as well as you could be, possibly. And I think that he did a nice job. But still just 19 points. They're not ready to rename the Waldron deck the Thomas Brown deck, okay? But I do think that it was progress.
Let's try Mike. Mike's listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, guys. Let me make just a quick comment about the Montez Sweat trade, and then I want to talk about Ryan Poles. But, gosh, I hope this Montez Sweat trade doesn't look to be too bad. But the guy may not get 20 sacks in 3 years. But, you know, the Ryan Poles deal. Listen, if the Bears don't really do too much better and we have a losing season, that's three. When does the spotlight get on Poles? And more specifically, I'm not going to go through all his deals, but is this Ryan Pace now where we have to bring in a coach, tie him to the GM, you extend the GM's contract after three losing years? Because he's probably got a five-year contract, so he'll be going into year four. Guys, help me out with this. I mean, how can we get out of this hamster wheel?
You want to get rid of Poles? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think if you have three losing seasons, do you think the players are good, or is it just because we're fans of the team? Are they good if you have three losing seasons?
Mike, it's a great call. It's a really interesting question, and it's not one that you can answer in 30 seconds or 2 minutes. It's something that we're going to spend the rest of the season conversing about, because it is relevant, Molly, and it's not meant to be a knee-jerk reaction, but you have to look at whether this Bears operation is headed in the right direction at the end of another losing season, if it ends up being a losing season. So 3 years into any regime, if there are three straight losing years, and if you have to look with a microscope for see signs of progress, you got a problem. Now, maybe it'll be obvious by January, whatever, when the season ends. You got Caleb Williams. That's a good start. You got a defense that we once thought was elite. Maybe. So I'm not ready to sit here and tell you that, Mike, you're way off base. Be fair to Ryan Poles. He deserves the benefit of the doubt. I think there's a lot to see over the next seven games. It's not conclusive that it's a rubber stamp. He's coming back. That's in my view. They may have already think he is, and they want to give it. That's fine. But, like, I just don't know how
I got to be honest with you. I think the next move is the coach. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to have a real hard time coming back.
I agree with that.
I don't agree that means Poles as well.
I don't think him as well, but I think it's a free pass.
I think that the team president's going nowhere. I think ownership's not going to change. And I'd be very surprised if the general manager gets run out after 3 years.
I would be too. Let me be fair and clear. But he mentioned contract extension. I would not do that.
Oh, I mean,
I would not do that with the general manager. I don't think he's earned that kind of confidence after this type of a season.
You know, I think what's a really interesting question, and one that we will be talking about moving forward, is do you trust the people who hired Shane Waldron to be the people that hire the next head coach?
That's my biggest issue right now.
That's
getting
good,
past
it's a,
that.
It's worth a discussion for sure.
Right now, be the sixth caller to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. You can win a pair of tickets for you to see Tyler Childers at the Alpine Music Theater July 26th next summer. 312-540-0670. Win a pair of tickets for Tyler Childers next summer.
All right, we've got Marshall and Dan. We'll talk to our colleagues next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.